Okay, we will now call to order the December 11, 2012 City of Daytona Beach Special Magistrate Proceedings. At the outset of the meeting, I've reviewed the minutes of the November 13, 2012 meeting, have approved them, and have now executed them. Before we proceed to hearing the cases, do we have any announcements that need to be made?
Yes, Mr. Vakelda, we have one case that's in compliance that's not on the agenda. It's case number 2, SMG 10-1269, Johnny McDaniel, 515 Walker Avenue, in compliance as of December 5th, 2012. And I believe that's all.
All right. That's it. We'll proceed with the hearing of the cases. Will all those representatives of the City of Daytona Beach testifying this morning's proceedings, please step forward and be sworn.
You solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Okay. All right, first case on the agenda is Primus Maddox. Is there anyone here for the respondent?
Good morning.
Morning.
Could you state your name, please?
Christopher Maddox.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, this matter is here for imposition of fine if non-compliance with outside storage and exterior surfaces, progress report, and dilapidated roof and garage doors. So let's hear from our inspector first. What's the status of this matter?
Good morning, Mr. Scalzo. My name is John Stinson, Code Enforcement Inspector of the City of Daytona Beach. My qualifications are on file with the City. This is case number SMG 101268, City of Daytona Beach versus Maddox Primus. Property address is 417 Fletcher Street. The violations were outside storage of junk and debris, dilapidated roof, exterior surfaces, and dilapidated garage door. As of right now, the garage door is completely gone, and some of the outside storage has been removed. There's quite a bit of storage out by the curb today. It's garbage day, so I'm assuming that's going to be gone. Outside of that, that is the status of the property. The outside storage should be removed today. However, the exterior surfaces are not yet in compliance, nor is the garage door or the roof.
All right, well, this matter is here for the imposition of a fine. Is there a fine the city's proposing?
The city is asking for $75 per day to be capped at
$10,000. All right. What's the respondent?
It's just overall financial. I got, I've done research trying to get a garage door, which is $825. Did research on the roof, which is $8,000. Wayne's Roofing is trying to assist me in where they're trying to get donations from other roofing companies, such as material. So right now, it's just financially. You know, it's not that we're not being compliant or being stubborn about it, you know, but I just don't have the money. My dad, he's up in age. I'm trying to help him, and he's not here this morning because he's sick. So there's no more we can do. You know, we're not trying to be not compliant to it, but just don't have the money financially.
This house occupied?
Sir.
Is it occupied?
Yes, sir.
Your dad lives in it?
No, sir.
Who lives in it?
Me and my roommates. There's also a newborn baby in there also. I just need more time, you know.
How much more time, and what is it you're going to accomplish in that time?
Overall, sir, everything.
That's a lot to ask for. Give me a plan. Give me some hope.
Okay.
Give me something to work with. Or my only alternative here is to default over there, and he wants $75 a day until he pistol whips you guys into shape.
Understood.
So give me a suggestion.
Okay, well, I just started working at Golden Corral, so I'm planning on putting money into the house also, not so much by just sketching at a time, but the process is going to be sped up, you know. It's just money. I'm going to do it. You know, I'm determined.
Okay. Tell me what you think you can reasonably accomplish within some specifically definable amount of time.
The roof and the start of the garage, I mean the roof, sir. The roof and the garage. Then the rest of the debris, you know, around the house will be taken care of. I put so much trash out there and I wait for them to come and get it. But they won't come. I've called them or whatever and they say they're going to come, but they don't come with a cherry picker. So I only put so much out there. I put it all out, they're just going to sit there. I don't have the money to pay no one to haul it away.
Okay, Mr. Inspector, I assume the roof work is going to require a roofing contractor?
Yes, sir.
She wrote a letter to General Sachs, Ms. Patricia, over one of the group. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
No, not yet.
I mean, is most of the stuff we're looking at aesthetics, superficial, or are there structural things there that I need to know about?
I believe his biggest hurdle is going to be the roof. The rest of the issues are relatively cosmetic. Some fascia board on the front in the south side. Like I said, the garbage man should pick up that pile of trash there today. Get out there with some paint brushes and fix that light fixture in the garage door.
So what progress has been made since we were here last
time? On the north side of the building was completely full of outside storage. It's all gone. The garage door was completely dilapidated. Well, it's gone now, so actually it looks better. And that is where we are right now. So the majority of the outside storage, which is what brought our attention to the property, most of that is gone. He's working on the garage door, and you heard his explanation for the rest of the work that needs to be done.
Okay. I'm going to amend our previous order of noncompliance to establish another cutoff date of January 2, 2013, for you to come into compliance or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. That means you are currently in the mode where you're going to be fined if work isn't done. I'm giving you another 30 days here now, and I'm hoping over the course of those 30 days you do as much as is humanly possible to bring as many things into compliance as you can with whatever resources you have available. And I'm hoping that the next time I see you, you've at least got a plan with regard to the roof, because that sounds like that's going to be a major hurdle. All right, so we can be somewhat patient in an effort to help you move this thing forward, and we're, of course, thankful that you've done what you've done so far in the way of cleaning up the property, and that's the only thing that keeps you from being fined right now. So the progress to date is what keeps you from being fined right now, so I'm kind of hoping that progress continues forward, or else that mood will change. So I'm giving you a new compliance date of January 2, 2013. The next time I see you here, which will probably be January 8th, because I know you're not going to be in compliance, I'm hoping this gentleman is going to confirm that you've done as much as you possibly could to take care of as much of the aesthetic stuff as is needed, because it sounds as though you've done most of the cleanup, and I'm hoping you'll return here with some sort of a plan with regard to the roof that we can then fashion some other plan going forward, or if you're just going to throw up your hands and say, I've done as much as I can do and we can't do anything more, then I guess I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
No, sir, I won't even speak that into existence with me being non-compliant, but I'm going to do it.
All right, good luck to you. Let's see what you can get done by January 2nd and come back with a plan for the roof.
Thank you, Thomas, sir. Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Appreciate you.
All right, case number 2 is in compliance. Case number 3, Kathy E. Smith.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am, if you would please state your name and be sworn.
My name is Kathy Smith.
You raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. The original citation was for dilapidated stairs, exterior surfaces, and windows. This property was to have been in compliance by December 5th. So let me ask our inspector. Apparently it is not. So, what progress has been made, and what are we lacking?
Good morning, Mr. Pagelja. My name is John Stinson, code officer, employee of the City of Daytona Beach. My corporate case is on file with the city. This is case number SMG-111270, City of Daytona Beach versus Kathy E. Smith. The property address is 510 Arthur Avenue. The parcel ID is 523-8180-30250. The violations were dilapidated stairs, which have been replaced without permits, exterior surfaces, and broken and inoperable windows. As of this morning, there still has been no application or issuance of permit for the stairs. And that's where the case stands right now.
And any work on the exterior surfaces and windows?
The one hole for the crawl space access has been covered. The porch has been painted. Outside of that, I have not noticed any other major change in the property.
All right, these stairs you're talking about, once the permit is obtained, are they then in compliance?
Yes.
Or are they going to be torn apart and redone?
As a layperson looking at them, the stairs look fine. They just need to be permitted.
All right, and a guesstimate as to how much time it should take to bring into compliance what remains to be done?
The next cutoff.
All right. Let's say, Ms. Smith, why aren't we done with this?
Okay, I have a guesstimate right here. I have a blueprint to the the building permit right here and a blueprint to the stairs. But the only thing that's getting me right now is Mr. Ray McLeod. He charged me $150 to do it. But I would not have that money until at least next week on Monday to do the contract on it. So I got all that done. He told me to pressure wash it, which I did that much as I could on it because I couldn't afford to try to paint it. And the windows, I have the windows, the screens for the windows and stuff inside my house where I live at to put on that. So the only thing that's really got me right now is the building permit to get the get it together with the contractor, Mr. Ray McLeod. So he charged me $150 yesterday, but I won't have that until next week, Monday.
So once you have this money from Mr. McLeod, you'll be able to complete the permit.
Yes, sir.
And once you complete the permit, then presumably the stairs will be in compliance. You have screens for the windows.
Yes.
All right. What about exterior? Are the screens all the windows require? Well, I saw some boards up against windows there.
No, that board was the crawl space for under the house, which is fine. And I would say 8 out of the 15 screens, and she says she has them inside, so they're not installed.
So we have the screens, and then we still got to deal with the exterior surfaces.
That's correct. When and if they finish pressure washing, hopefully that will take care of that problem as well.
All right, so Ms. Smith, so give me, tell me when it is you're going to have all this done.
Hopefully, I know I have this done. I have the contract done at least Monday. I have that up. But some of the other little things, probably need more time on that. The next cutoff day will do.
All right.
Yes, sir.
And all right, I will amend our current order of noncompliance to allow the respondent until January 2, 2013 to come into compliance or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. All right, good luck to you, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Thompson, are you looking for the man for
Walker Street? Case number 4, Karen Ann Fisher Barrett.
Because he's sitting in the order.
Okay.
Anyone here for the respondent? Let's say the city.
Good morning, Mr. Skelton. My name is John Stinson, Code Enforcement Inspector employed for the City of Daytona Beach. My qualifications are on file with the city. This is case number SMG111271, City of Daytona Beach versus Barrett, Karen, and Fisher. Property address is 1057 Berkshire Road. Parcel ID is 521205000200. The violations that we're discussing are outside storage of junk and debris, dilapidated windows, dilapidated exterior doors, missing exterior doors, dilapidated fencing, and dilapidated roof, concentrating on the fascia board. Currently, the only change on this property is that the rear door has been secured with a board and the fence has been closed on the north side of the building. Outside of that, there has been no change in status of the property. And the city did secure it.
And the city secured it.
That's correct.
So I presume this property isn't occupied.
No, it is not.
And the only effort you described to me was what? Securing a back door?
That's correct.
The respondent?
They boarded up. I have not spoken with the respondent, but they have boarded up the back door and painted it to match the exterior of the building. Outside of that, nothing's been done.
Painted what to match the exterior of the building?
The wood of the board that they use to board up the opening in the rear.
All right. I don't see a respondent here. What's the city proposing?
The city is asking for $75 per day to be capped at $10,000.
All right, based on the respondent's noncompliance, based on the respondent's virtual lack of effort, based on the respondent's failure to attend and offer any explanation as to why she has been as dilatory as she has been today, I'm going to go ahead and order the respondent to pay a sum of $75 per day commencing December 5, 2012, and continuing each day thereafter until the respondent is either in compliance or the amount of the fine reaches the sum of $10,000, whichever occurs first. Case number 5 is in compliance. Case number 6, Jack Morris Jr. Not seeing a respondent. What's in the city?
Good morning. I'm John Stinson, Code Enforcement Inspector, employed with the city. My qualifications are on file. This is case number SMG 111273. City of Daytona Beach versus Jack Morris Jr. Property address is 708 Kingston Avenue. Parcel ID is 533-85902-0030. Violations on this property are outside storage of junk and debris, junk vehicle, dilapidated roofing, and peeling paint. And the property owner has just arrived.
Okay. And tell me, we've had some improvements since these photographs were taken.
Some, very little, of the outside storage has been removed.
Okay. You Mr. Morris?
Yes, sir.
Come on up. You're on deck.
Could you state your name, please?
Jack Morris, Jr.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
All right. Our inspector tells us we haven't had a whole lot of work done in order to come into compliance, that we still have a lot of outside storage, junk vehicle, dilapidated roof, peeling paint. Let's say the respondent.
Well, yes, I have had a lot of stuff that was done. If you look at the previous picture that they took in the beginning and take the picture that they just took last week, the stuff that was in the front is clean. It's just the stuff that's on the roof and a little bit of stuff on the side, plus the vehicle that I was driving, and now the other vehicle broke too. So I got two vehicles that's broke down.
So which way are we going? Are we going
I'm trying to go forward, but because of the complications that I'm having, it's kind of taking me backwards.
Give me a plan real quick.
Well, the plan that I'm trying to get everything taken care of, I'm a single parent with a 5-year-old daughter, and I'm doing whatever I can because I'm under restrictions under the doctor where I only can work 16 hours a day. And it's been like that since 2003.
All right, so we still have some outside storage, if I understand what you're telling me.
Well, it's not really outside storage. It's just a few, like wood, like your barbecue wood that's put up inside of the house that I was going to put in the back, but I never did get a chance to get back there with it.
All right, we now have two junk vehicles?
Well, they're not junk vehicles. It's just that they're broken down, and I don't have enough money to pay for it. And then one part they've been trying to get since Thanksgiving.
So they're tagged but inoperable?
One of them tagged, and the other one is not tagged because I didn't have the money to pay for the tag, but I got the insurance for it.
So one junk and one inoperable?
No. Both of them inoperable, but neither one of them junk, sir.
Okay.
People want off this job.
Well, tell me how dilapidated is the roof.
The roof is just, it's really just the edge of it, the overhang. It's just that when the when we had the three hurricanes, when the storm came, the tree fell there and it just dented in. The roof is not damaged.
Which hurricanes you talking about?
I'm talking about the three that we had back to back.
2004?
Yes.
And what about the peeling paint?
The peeling paint to the house? I just have the money to paint it.
All right, Mr. Inspector, how long is it going to take to bring this into compliance?
The next cutoff.
All right. Mr. Morris, the inspector seems to think that you ought to be able to have this completed by January 2, 2013. You're either going to give me a plan right now or you're going to get fined. So I hope you got a plan.
But if you give me until March.
That ain't happening.
That ain't happening.
No, that ain't happening. This stuff's too easy to take care of.
It's too easy to take care of if you have...
March isn't happening. What's your next plan?
February.
Okay. We're going to work our way to January 2 here eventually?
I just need a little bit more time than that.
I'll give you a little more time.
I'll give you till January 2, 2013 to come into compliance or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. It isn't what you asked for, but it's another 30 days. And if I see you again, hopefully you and he are going to explain to me a lot of work's been done and a lot of progress has been made, and what little is left to be done was something that was really beyond your control. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck to you.
All right, thank you.
Case number 7 is in compliance. Case number 8, Renee L. Forbes and Bessie B. Forbes. Anyone here for the respondent? What say the city?
Good morning. My name is John Stinson. I'm Code Enforcement Inspector employed with the City of Daytona Beach. Qualifications are on file. This is case number SMG111276, City of Daytona Beach versus Forbes, Renee, JTRS, and BZ's B. Forbes, JTRS. Property address is 141.0 Woods Drive, Daytona Beach. Parcel ID is 523-838-003260. Violations we're discussing are an unsecure pool and an unmaintained pool. As of yesterday, the pool is still unmaintained and is still unsecure.
Unsecured, what does that mean?
There are two entrance points from the exterior of the property to the pool, two screen doors. Both of them are unlocked. Now there's actually a tear in the screen behind the grill, but you have to literally
You've been after these people since November, since September, to take care of this?
That's correct.
All right, what are you proposing?
The city is asking for $100 per day to be capped at $15,000.
This is a dirty, unsecured pool?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm going to order the respondent to pay the sum of $200 per day, commencing December 5, 2012. Is this a single-family residence?
Yes, sir.
Rental, so I believe.
Pardon?
50. It's a rental?
It's not occupied right now. I would say it's a rental, so I would say 15.
All right, $200 per day commencing December 5, 2012 and continuing each day thereafter until the property is either in compliance or the amount of the fine has reached the sum of $15,000. Case number 9, Harborside Sunsets Condominium Association, Inc.
Please. Sahai Marcus.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir.
Good morning. David Newell, City of Daytona Beach Fire Department Fire Inspector. My credentials are on file. This is case number SMG11-12-77, Harborside Sunsets Condominium Association, Incorporated versus the City of Daytona Beach. If you remember last month, we had numerous violations that came from a fire alarm system that was not active at the time, had many issues as it pertains to smoke detectors that were not either plugged in, worked, even spackled over, essentially. We had issues with lightweight truss signs, people that were ADA, had disabilities with not the right actual smoke detectors, emergency lighting, all those issues. On the 5 days after, which was 11/19 of 12, all issues were corrected from the last month's meeting. So all of the violations have been corrected. The fire alarm is currently now compliant. All smoke detectors upon my inspection on that date, all are in working order, and all the rest of the issues are corrected. The city is requesting the will fine order for the violations because of the past history of the property and another property that they have in the city.
Past history of the property, what does that mean?
Past history of the property, the last few issue times that I've been there, I've got dates here and some information, which would be April of 2009, They had the same issue with regards to the fire alarm system, which was later corrected in July of 2009. In January of 2010, we had the same issue again, which was then later corrected in February of 2010. There was no inspection in 11, and then this issue coming up in 2012, and that's for 900 South Peninsula.
Okay. Is there some sort of a service that's supposed to be monitoring this for the respondent or something like that?
Yes, it's required to be monitored. It is monitored now. It was, I don't know what issues before they were having. It would have been, some of it was connection issues with regards to telephone lines from the past. I don't know exactly what all the issues were each and every time, but I know on this one there was a lengthy list of issues regarding.
Well, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a little perspective.
Okay.
This looks like a lengthy list of violations.
Mainly, we're looking
how they accumulate like that without coming to someone's attention, and I don't know how fire alarm services operate or anything like that. But since you're the one asking for the will fine, I'm trying to determine how negligent somebody was before. This list accumulates again right after the next fire.
Right. Essentially, on an annual basis, these alarms are required to be inspected and tested each year, annually. Through that test, they note the deficiencies that need to be corrected. When a device, such as a pull station or a horn strobe, happens to go bad, that doesn't necessarily send a signal to the monitoring company if it goes bad. If you pull the pull station, obviously it would send a signal to the monitoring company. I can speak for, I think it was 2009, where there was an issue where there was no connection to the phone lines. There was a phone line issue. I think it was later discovered there was a Bell South problem with the phone line. But there was no monitoring. There was other issues regarding the fire alarm at that time also, but essentially there was an issue. What I'm just trying to say is each issue, talking about the fire alarm in general, every time that I've been out there, there's always been fire alarm issues, and then they've been later corrected after I've noticed those issues.
I'm trying to figure out how we get proactive here. It looks as though this last batch of violations you discovered sometime, in September of this year?
Yes, sir.
And why weren't they detected prior to you going out there and finding them? By the respondent or whatever service the respondent is supposed to have in place?
As far as the tackling some of these with the smoke detectors, it is the responsibility of the – this is an apartment complex, three-story apartment complex. Right. It's the responsibility of the manager, maintenance person, whoever the owners employ – to ensure that everything is done required by code and the license of the city. So it would be their responsibility to ensure that smoke detectors work, that the fire alarm system is maintained. When the fire alarm system is in trouble, to contact the owners and make arrangements for things to be corrected or find out what the problems are. For this specific instance this year, with regards to the fire alarm system, it was in trouble, amongst other things that later was turned off, if you remember. It was in trouble, and they were trying to use, because they didn't have a key, a coat hanger to just silence it. So they're basically silencing an alarm that they were basically silencing alarm instead of fixing the problem. The maintenance individuals or whomever were employed were just silencing it, not trying to fix the problem at that time.
Okay. All right, and you are looking for a will fine in this matter because presumably the property is now in compliance. And, Mr. Attorney, the will fine is what, up to $5,000 for every future violation?
Yes, Your Honor. If it represents a repeat violation, it would be up to $5,000.
All right, let's hear from the respondent. What say the respondent with regard to the city's request for a will fine?
I mean, all the violations have been corrected. So if you ask for this, will we have to pay $5,000 now, or is in case this happens again, you guys are going to charge the $5,000?
The you guys would be me.
Yeah.
It's up to $5,000.
Okay.
It's supposed to be progressive, meaning starting out theoretically at $1, working its way all the way up to $5,000. But I can tell you when it comes to life safety issues like swimming pools and fire alarms, we get real harsh real fast.
Okay.
And what I'm hearing from our inspector over there is that your people were basically rigging this system instead of just fixing it, which doesn't make me feel good at all. So I guess what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to caution you that you need to make certain that whatever service you have in place to monitor these is doing its job. You need to be certain to warn your managers, to be certain to report any problems it has, either to your service, the fire department, or whatever it has, because I'm uncomfortable that the city goes in there and finds these many problems, notwithstanding the circumstances by which they arose, because this is a life safety issue, and we do take those extremely serious. And it's not going to be any defense for you to come in here and tell me that, well, I had a, because I hear it 1,000 times, well, I had a new manager, and he didn't know what to do, and so he did this, and he did that, and he thought he was doing right. Ain't going to hear it. You're the one that's responsible for it. You're the one. And when it comes to life safety issues, I don't think it's too much to ask to tell the owner to take care of it himself, to be honest with you. So, with that, I'm going to, I guess, now find that the respondent is in compliance.
Well, I don't know if there's been a finding of non-compliance.
Yes, there was okay. The first hearing, there was a finding of non-compliance. I just had a quick question. Is it just the smoke detectors, or is it the entire case?
It's the total violation and compliance.
The total violation and compliance?
Yes,
everything is in compliance, yes.
Okay, then I will find the respondent that is now, I'll find that the respondent is now in compliance. But that for every future violation, the respondent be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine up to $5,000 per occurrence.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank
Please
you.
Take care of it.
Thank you.
Okay. It's been suggested to me that case number 10 may be lengthy. Is there anyone here for Tara Green III LLC? Is there anyone here for New Life Bible Church TRC?
They might not be here. Both of them.
Is there anyone here for Jimmy A. Hanna and Nasif Hanny?
Yes.
Why don't you come on up? I'm going to take care of you right now. Is there anyone here for Thomas Katora?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right with you. All right, we're going to take care of these two cases, and then we'll return to Florida Pacific Leasing, and you all will have as much time as you need from that point on.
Good morning. Are you both going to be testifying?
Yes.
Can you state your names, please?
Sharif Saad.
I'm sorry, what was your name?
Sharif Saad.
Sharif
Saad, okay. Hani Nasif.
Both raise your right hands, please. Do solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. Just make sure you speak into the microphone.
Okay, gentlemen, do you agree these violations existed or occurred as stated in this notice of violation?
Yes.
All right, I find the respondent in non-compliance. Mr. Inspector, how much time should it take for the respondents to come into compliance?
By the next cutoff.
Gentlemen, the inspector seems to think you can bring this into compliance by January 2, 2013. What do you say?
Your Honor, we've been handling this case with KB Homes. KB Homes was issued a permit by the city of Daytona Beach to build this premises for Hanny, and they failed to maintain the property in the right way. We had an inspector go out there. The whole siding of the house is buckling in, not the frame, it's the stucco itself. And we had an engineer go out there, and we had a contractor go out there. We've been in talks with KB Home now for about 3 to 4 years to get this fixed. They refused. We went through their warranty division. They just gave us a runaround, and we finally hired an attorney to handle this. And per the attorney, it says, until such time that we reach a conclusion, I caution you to preserve the home in its current state so that KB Home will have the opportunity at trial to have their experts examine and rebut the findings of AOE contractors. Because AOE contractors and the city itself, when I talked to the inspector and enforcement, they acknowledge the construction was done in error. The way the house is completely in error. The way they overlaid the stucco seams or something that water penetrated, and once the water penetrated there, it peeled everything off. It's peeling everything off the house.
Okay, have you already filed suit?
We are in the process because we have to go through the litigation, not litigation, mediation with them and everything else. We have to go through the warranty division. And
I already heard that part.
Yeah.
All right, who's your attorney?
Stone, Jacob Stone.
All right. Now, I happen to know that when you get into a situation like this, you're going to get a certain amount of time from someone like me for you and for the other side to come do their inspections, take all their photographs, have their experts look at it, because what I'm telling you is that ain't going to sit there like that for 3 or 4 years while you litigate. All right, so what I'm going to suggest here for now is I'm going to give you till February 6th of 2013 to come into compliance. If it's not in compliance, then you're going to come back and you're going to give me a plan whereby your attorney and the other attorney have agreed that within a certain amount of time, their respective experts are going to go out there and do their thing. Because you'll be in court forever. Well, I shouldn't say that.
I hope not.
You'll be in court for years. I can safely say that. And that's not going to sit there and just continue to deteriorate the whole time. And what you're needing, I'm familiar with what you're needing. I do it myself at times. But what you're needing is something that can be secured within 60 days, 90 days, easily. And then with that, we're going to expect this to be brought into compliance. So as it stands right now, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to order the respondent to come into compliance by February 6, 2013. Now, if you're not in compliance by February 6, 2013, and you're standing before me on February 12, 2013, and you're continuing to tell me about ongoing litigation, which I fully expect you to do, I'm at least expecting you to say, my attorney and the other side have agreed that they're going to do all their inspections, they're going to take all their photographs, and they're going to do all their testing within a finite amount of time, whether it be 30, 60 days, something like that. And then after that, we'll be expecting it to be brought into compliance. So I'm sensitive to your rights as a litigant. I'll do everything I can to preserve and protect them. But that's not going to sit there for 3 or 4 years. And you can secure what you need to secure for the purpose of your litigation in relatively short order.
Thank you.
All right. So good luck to you. And you'll either be in compliance on February 6th, or I guess we'll see you February 12th, and then we'll talk some more.
Thank you.
All right. The other case was Thomas Katora.
Your name, please, in the microphone.
Mayor Williams.
Sir?
Thomas Katora.
Okay. Can you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Katora, we have a lengthy premises inspection report. And I do mean lengthy. Do you agree these violations existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
Yeah.
All right, I find the respondent non-compliant. Non-compliance. Mr. Inspector, how much time to come into compliance?
Mr. Pekelda, Ms. Williams is from Community Development, and she is going to fill you in on their plan for this property.
Throwing in the towel, are you? Okay, Mrs. Williams?
Yes, we're planning on demolishing this house and rebuilding another house. It's in the bidding process right now. We expect the bids in on the 21st of this month. Then the case will be closed after the 1st of January. Under the HUD guidelines and the contracts, there is a 90-day time limit for reconstruction. So we're looking at having this project completed by April 2013.
I assume demolition brings you into compliance in this case, doesn't it?
It would.
When do you expect to have the property demolished?
Demolished, I would say latter January, no later than 1st of February.
Okay. And did the city have anything they wanted to add?
Uh, We believe that the demo should be done by 2-6 and that the property should be unoccupied and secured, because it's definitely not livable right now.
Is it unoccupied now?
Yeah, now.
And secured?
Yeah, I got no transfer. That's the time on it.
Okay. Very good. All right, then I will order the respondent to come into compliance by February 6, 2013, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter, and that in the interim, the property is not to be occupied and it is to be secured. All right, and just for your edification, once the property is demolished, this case is in compliance. So your future construction plans are yours and yours alone.
Okay.
All right, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, let's return to case number 10. Florida Pacific Leasing Company, LLC, and 316 Main Street Station.
Morning.
Okay, do we have anyone for the respondent?
For the respondent, Pete Heber, and the owners of the property.
Okay, if the owner's going to be testifying, he'll need to be sworn.
Can you state your name, please?
Frederick Johns.
Just make sure you're speaking to the microphone. Yeah.
Phaedra Lee Harper.
Sir?
Cy Manula, M-A-N-U-L-A.
Can you raise your right hands, please? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Huebner, do you agree these violations existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
We do not and plan to present testimony on that issue.
Okay. What say the city?
My name is Officer Daniel Garcia. I am employed by the City of Daytona Beach as a code enforcement officer. I've been employed for 6 years as a code officer. This is City of Daytona Beach versus Florida Pacific LLC, Leasing Company LLC. Property address 316 Main Street. Parcel ID number is 5305081500010. Violation is Article 17, Section 2.111.9C8, outside activity in violation of the master plan. The property is now in compliance as of yesterday, 12/10/2012. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Colleen Miles, where she explain the process.
I'm Colleen Miles, zoning officer for the City of Daytona Beach. I've been employed with the city a little over 11 years. The master plan process, the mechanism for approving it is in the Land Development Code, Article 17, of which I'll provide you all a copy. This creates a mechanism for the master plan guidelines, which regulates the bike events. The master plan guidelines have also been handed out and will be provided to the attorney and the respondent. This, in turn, allows the commission to enact a resolution. Resolution 12-195 allowed Biketoberfest 2012 to occur. Participation in the events is a privilege, not a right. These are done by so many days per year. A business is open so many hours per day. Counts are conducted by city staff to ensure that. The city commission, over the last 12 events, has requested that that each applicant provide specific locations for vendors, types of vendors, stage height, speaker direction and location. Specific charities even should be listed on the master plan site plans to ensure compliance and the participation in the event. Staff tries to assist each applicant prior to the event beginning for compliance to ensure that the event goes off well, we have life safety issues addressed, and compliance with the site plans as submitted. These inspections are conducted usually one day to 2 days prior. We've taken the position recently to do it the day prior to, usually around lunchtime, because that's when things are actually starting to take shape, in order to allow for any tweaking of the master plan, site plan, so that we all have a compliant and safe event. The inspections were conducted Wednesday, October 17th, directly after lunch, for both Main Street and Beach Street. Myself, Mr. Garcia, police officer Sherry Siracusa, who's associated with the code enforcement, all went out like we do twice a year, and Mr. Garcia can speak to the event and the inspection.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Vakelja. My name is Hector Garcia. I am the code compliance manager for the city of Daytona Beach. I've been employed with the city for 15 months, and prior to that, I've been in code enforcement 9 years and a retired detective for 14 years. As Ms. Miles stated, we went out, conducted an inspection of Main Street. When we got to 316 Main Street, we noticed that the construction of the stage was not being constructed according to the master plan. There should have been a food vendor, which was indicated on the master plan, which is the 1F, as you can see up on the screen. That was not there. The stage had been moved forward to substitute where the food vendor was, at which time Ms. Miles and myself went. We spoke to Mr. Rick Johns, and I advised him that he was not in compliance. As I stated previously, the stage was under construction. I asked him how much time he would need to come into compliance, and with a smirk on his face, he told me 4 days. I told him that was unacceptable, that he had to do it. They were out there working on it. Why couldn't it get done? He said, do what you got to do. I'll see you in court. At which time, I called Officer Daniel Garcia, had him come down, photograph the area as we were leaving. From speaking with Mr. John, there was also noticed that where the bees on the plan are, there should be beer tubs there. They weren't. There was a mobile bar, so to speak, but it was constructed that did not meet the requirements. That was also addressed. The respondent's daughter at that time was notified. And again, Daniel Garcia came in to write the notice of violation and take the pictures.
Okay, so specifically the violations are deviation from whatever plans were being submitted to the city, and those deviations were what?
The deviations was the stage was moved forward to where the food vendor was, and the bar that was put up was not part of the master plan also. And the purpose of the master plan is that it's sent in before the commission. The commission approves it, and there shouldn't be any deviation to it once it had been approved.
Well, the purpose of the plan is more than that. The purpose of the plan is also to comply with all the specifications that are put in place to try to minimize the intrusion from a business like this into the surrounding residential areas, which I suspect is why the stage was moved away from Main Street to begin with, for example. Am I correct?
Moved away? No, it wasn't moved away from Main Street. It was moved closer to Main Street.
It was supposed to be moved away.
Correct.
Instead, it was moved closer to Main Street.
Correct.
So these specifications are, anyway, these specifications all have a purpose.
Correct.
And the purpose is that, so this business owner and the surrounding neighbors can coexist during what is a high volume period. Okay, anything else you wanted to add?
Mr. Fakel, if I could just ask, Mr. Garcia, you had photographs as well that was included representing in your packet.
Yes.
Are those photographs, were those photographs that were out there, the date?
The date and time stamp,
when you
yes.
Were out there?
Yes, they are.
And that will represent what you saw when you went out?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's from a previous event.
The dates.
What am I looking at here? Is that an example of the mobile bar you were talking about?
Correct. That's correct. That's the bar that was where in place of where the beer tub should have been. can go to the next picture. There it is after the event, which was never taken down. Next picture. That's another front. That's the front view, right from Main Street. Next picture. A side view of it. Next picture. Next. Next. As the date indicates, that's 11/26, so it was still up again without being moved. It was moved over from the northeast side to the center of the parking lot area. Next. 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 This was yesterday to show that it was not there. Next. Believed.
That's on the actual date.
That's on the actual date while the stage was being constructed. Next. There it is again. Actual date of the violation. Next. Next. And that's the space indicating where there should have been a vendor, and the stage was moved closer to Main Street. Next. 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 That's indicating where the bar was on the actual date of the violation. Next. And that's when it's been moved.
Mr. Garcia, at what point, how long were they in non-compliance? At what point did they come into compliance?
They came into compliance yesterday by removing the bar.
Okay.
The mobile bar.
And it's been inspected throughout on numerous occasions from October 17th?
That's correct.
Okay. I don't have any. Well, I don't have any other questions.
Okay.
What? Explain to me, or have someone explain to me the significance or the additional impact moving that stage closer to Main Street has, as far as the impact on the surrounding areas. I assume these things are all carefully crafted to put these things in specific locations for specific purposes.
Yes, sir.
That's been my understanding of the master plan all along. And while it may sound trivial to somebody to say, I want this 1 foot back or 6 inches back, it actually all dovetails into a science, if you will, as to how things on these properties are situated in order to minimize the impact on the surrounding areas. Am I mistaken?
You're totally correct.
So, the significance of moving that stage closer to Main Street as far as this master plan is concerned and the thought behind the master plan would be what?
Well, there's an impact to pedestrian traffic. There's an impact to sound and light. There's an impact to crowd control. There's a mandated 2 foot setback only on Main Street, not the other areas, and there's multiple areas for the master plan that's mandated to be required because of the limited pedestrian corridor, if you will, allowable. So by relocating things and moving very large things forward, it causes an impact.
And the mobile bar versus the beer tubs, again, help me out. What's the science behind that, and how does the mobile bar somehow deviate, deter, or detract from whatever was allowable about the beer tubs?
I don't know necessarily that it detracts. However, what you apply for on the master plan should be what is erected and maintained during the length of the event. That's what the commission approves. That's what staff and various levels of both the committees associated with each event and the various avenues of staff review. Ask for the world and reduce yourself, but don't ask for a little and then put a lot in locations that weren't previously approved.
Okay. Anything else? All right. What say the respondent?
Good
Peter Huebner, 523 North Halifax, Daytona Beach, Florida, representing the respondent, Florida Pacific Leasing, LLC, and its owner, Mr. Rick Johns. Need to be a little bit of history here on this project. First of all, we believe that if you look at the site plan, you'll see that the stage was to be basically 12 feet away from the right of the sidewalk there at Main Street. They have provided to you no measurements whatsoever to support their claim that that stage was anyway moved forward or closer to Main Street. We'll be able to show shortly through direct testimony that is exactly where it was supposed to be to begin with. The food vendor is not there, and as Mr. Johns will testify to, is the food vendor was considered to be a fire hazard as a part of the stage, because that's an OSHA-related stage that's put up there specifically with specific OSHA guidelines, and that food vendor was not going to be allowed there. It simply isn't there. How that has any impact on the health, safety, and welfare of anyone is a little hard to explain at this point in time. If you go back and look at the guidelines, as I understand it, this process, and I've not necessarily been through this process, but the city is taking the position that if, in fact, these folks are found guilty of noncompliance of their master plan, then they're basically be given a death threat. They're no longer allowed to participate in any itinerant vendors on their property for a period of 3 years. So the impacts are great here, and I think evaluating the impacts of them on whatever deviation is deemed might have taken place is important consideration by this his honor. And I'd like to go through that with some care with you. Would you put the master plan up for me, please? And we'll have direct testimony on all this in just a minute. We can use that master plan. This is my PowerPoint, and I have the thumb drive for you if you want to take it with you. And I'd also like to provide you a copy, if I may, with the actual... PowerPoint that we'll be presenting to you this morning.
Mr. Vakeljian, and no disrespect to Mr. Huebner, if I could just interrupt for a second. While we are talking about the master plan and master plan guidelines, and we are very general because this is an administrative proceeding, I just would like to object or at least bring to light that the collateral consequences of the master plan is not the determinations that we're making at this time. The determinations we're making is a determination of whether they were in compliance or noncompliance, and the ultimate penalties for noncompliance has nothing to do with, from a perspective of code enforcement, anything to do with the collateral issues of the impact.
Well, it has a big consequence to the respondent, and therefore that's why we're here in order to present direct testimony to this magistrate as to what we believe to be the salient facts and the fact that they were in compliance with their plan, save that food vendor. That food vendor is, if you'll notice, is 10 feet. You have a 2 feet setback. That's 12 feet. And you'll see from our measurements that stage was exactly 12 feet from the sidewalk of Main Street. It's in compliance. They've got no measurements. They provided no analysis of any description as to where that stage is from the sidewalk right there, and we do, and we'll provide that to you here quite shortly. Therefore, we believe that's in compliance. As to these vendors, the temporary bar is right here. I might add that once the event is over, the temporary bar was just sitting there. And it's not being used. It's not being vended from or anything. It was just being stored there because it's a fairly significant piece of equipment. They simply tore it down now and went ahead and stored it. So that bar has no impact on anybody subsequent to the event itself. So therefore, we don't believe that that's an issue. In looking at the standards that by which I believe this magistrate reviews the issue on the appeals is whether the applicant is an individual, the fault of the applicant in creating the condition, where the applicant is a corporation, limited liability company, or similar business firm, the fault of the firm's principal in creating the problem, the gravity of the violation, and any prior opportunities that the applicant and where the applicant is a business from the applicant's principles had to remedy his condition. That comes right out of your master plan guidelines for Bike Week. This particular site is, of course, the old Bill France Historic Service Station. We submitted our master plan, as Mr. Johns will testify. It was approved by the city. He went out and acquired a OSHA-style stage. After the Indiana tragedies, they are now all OSHA-certified if you're going to bring them in. They come in an 18-wheeler. They are put in. They are conditioned in with pylons. And I believe what the testimony is going to show is that when the code enforcement officers came in on October 17th, they walked in the door and said, we're going to require you to move your stage 12 feet to the south without any measurements, without any statement, without any understanding as to why that would be. The stage was already in place. It was already pyloned in. We'll show you where all the pylons are in to put that thing in because of the roof in particular is the major OSHA requirement for one of those particular installations. As we'll show you, if we had to move it 12 feet from its that then position, first of all, we'd be about 25 feet from Main Street, and there's no room. You couldn't. You'd be right into the building if you did that with the stage. That stage faces down Main Street towards the east, again for the principal reason, so that it has the least interference on the residential areas. It just simply goes down Main Street, not back the other way. I think, frankly, a lot less intrusive on residential areas than other bandstands that are operating at the same time every night down there on Main Street. They were only given 12 hours to try to remedy the problem, as I understand it. There's no way that stage can be put up and down and removed in 12 hours or even moved because it was physically impossible to move it that far. And then they would be clearly out of compliance with their own plan at that point in time. They were in compliance right where it was supposed to be, and they don't have any measurements, any documentation or diagrams to prove to the contrary. The bar is still kind of an unknown. That came up much later, as I understand it. I'll have the ladies testify to that. The bar never seemed to be much of an issue. It came up at the not in the initial violation, but showed up much later in another violation that was provided to them, which was a part of this process here today. It never was, in our understanding, even an issue or even a compliance issue until we received the formal notice of this particular meeting here today. At this point in time, I'd like to call Mr. Rick Johns to testify.
Please state your full name and current address.
Frederick Johns, 3706 Hugh Street, Port Orange, Florida.
Would you give the magistrate briefly your background?
I'm a certified public accountant. I've been licensed for 40 years. I moved to Port Orange in 1984. I purchased 316 Main Street property in July of 2007.
Since July 2007, has there ever been a code violation for your property?
No.
Are you familiar generally with the Beach Street and regulations necessary for special events such as bike weeks?
Yes.
What committees do you participate in gaining that information?
Well, we filed master plans for Biketoberfest and Bike Week for 2 times 5 is 10 or 11 engagements. I have a master plan here.
Okay. Does the master plan requirements require drawings that are measured, that are done to scale?
The master plan application very clearly says plans shall be drawn with sufficient detail to adequately describe all proposed outside activities. That's what I did.
Is that a copy of your application?
Yes.
If I could offer that application as the next exhibit. Was your master plan approved by the staff of the City of Daytona Beach?
Well, the application says that if it's not in sufficient detail, that the plan will be denied. So the plan was not denied, so I'm assuming it was in sufficient detail.
If I could have just one moment, Mr. McKelvey, and we have a copy. I didn't have a chance to see what's being submitted.
$1 million.
When you went to acquire the stage that is shown on your master plan, that is, would you give me the master plan, please, on my screen? Well, we can use this one. Is this the stage where you're going to put the band in play?
Yes.
And is this facing down Main Street to the east this way?
Facing down Main Street towards the ocean east.
To the east, okay. And this is the main building right here. The other buildings you have built already?
That's a building and a canopy.
And which way does the band face with the plane?
It's facing down Main Street towards the ocean.
Okay. Now, would you describe the band stand itself, where you bought it, and is it qualified under OSHA?
Basically, I was concerned because of things that have happened in the past in Indianapolis, and actually what happened last year, not so much during the event, but the weekend before the event, I was concerned about the safety of people that were had a stage. So I went and found OSHA certified builder, I forget his name right now, I have his name right here, to build something, and he said this is what we have to do. So that's exactly what we did.
How is this stage constructed?
It's a commercial stage. It's not just moving something around. It's a
How many people does it take to take and move that stage from the
AT
Wheeler and actually construct it?
Mr. Kelch, again, excuse me, but I don't see relevance to determinations of compliance or non-compliance for...
You gave the man 12 hours to come into compliance. He's going into the detail regarding the substantiality of the stage, if you will, and I assume it would be relevant, if for no other reason, to talk about how much time it would take in order to break it back down and remove it.
Precisely.
The stage comes in parts, and so you have different people constructing different parts of it. Again, I'm not an expert in stage building, but you have different people building different things. So the initial building of it, those people had already left because they have other stages to build in other parts of the country. This is a national stage company. So they're the people that would take to take it down had already left. There was some people left behind who were finishing off the minor, hooking up the wires and all that stuff that were there. But to actually move the stage would require me to go find or have the contractor find the people that constructed the stage in the beginning and then bring them back. Number two, according to OSHA, you cannot construct a stage when there's activity. That the only way these stages can be built is if there's no activity going on with customers or people like that. So it became a very difficult thing to do. It was almost impossible. I mean, it would have been impossible to actually move the stage.
When the stage was actually constructed, did you assign a location for it consistent with your master plan?
Yeah, I said put it right there.
Did you provide that in a master plan?
Yeah.
Now, there is a discussion about this food vendor, which was originally placed on your master plan, is not there, or was not there during the August 17th, 18th, and 19th of 2012. Why not?
The stage guy says you can't have a food vendor there for safety reasons, that something could catch on fire. So I moved that vendor from 1F to 2F, right below the mobile stage. You have 2F. So I moved him from 1F to 2F, right next to the mobile bar, which seems to be in question too.
Now, when did you first learn that the city took the position that you were not in compliance?
On October the 17th, Hector Garcia and Colleen Miles came into the back of the bar stating that I had to move the stage 12 feet or I would be shut down for 3 years. And then they left. Then they came back and said, how long would it take you to move the stage? I said 3 days, not 4 days. I said 3 days, because that's how long it took to put the stage up. So I'm assuming now that I've discovered from the stage guy, it would actually take that they couldn't do it. It would be physically impossible to do it within 3 days because of the restraints of OSHA. Then the next is D. Garcia showed up with this yellow piece of paper that he wanted me to sign, but it's insufficiently legal. It's not right. I'm not going to sign something that isn't correct. It's just legally insufficient. So I didn't sign it. Plus it says that I have a code violation, not code violations. To me, that's critical. That means one.
At that time, did they ever give you any notice that there was an issue about this mobile bar?
The only issue they came up with was the stage. I don't know anything about
it. Did you go out and examine the stage's location to determine if it was compliant with your master plan?
Eventually, because it's the day before Biketoberfest and there's a lot of things to do. You got people, you got bands, you got everything to do. Eventually, I went out there and took my 12-inch foot and went and measured, and it was in compliance. I didn't think too much of it at the time, because I was in compliance.
Now, when did you first learn about this issue about the mobile bar?
I received a notice of hearing. On, there was 3 certified letters sent. I only got 2 of them. Whenever that... That letter was sent on... I've got it here someplace. Oops. Anyway, I received a certified letter whenever that certified letter was received. There it is. In, according to the document, November the 19th. And I was reading through it, and it said, you were in violation of Land Development Code on the little yellow sheet of place. Notice a violation that says ordinance, but this one says Land Development Code. And it says, failure to comply with submitted site plan, moving the stage, and erecting a bar. I didn't know erecting a bar was a problem.
Did you ever move the stage from where
no.
it was placed on the master plan?
No.
At any time?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Well, you would know.
I would know. Well, I mean, it. No, it wasn't moved.
What would be the loss to your company if you were found not in compliance, or you're in compliance now, but that if the result that you would not no longer be allowed to have temporary vending during special events in Daytona Beach?
It would be in the millions.
Let's go to the next slide, please. Next slide, please. These are, as I understand it, are the basis in the PowerPoint for the standards by which the magistrate determines whether or not they have been in compliance or not, and have the ability to seek a permit for outside vending during special events. And I've already read those off to you as part of the PowerPoint process. We have no further questions of this witness.
I have a couple of questions. Mr. Johns, am I on?
Yes.
You
I can hear you.
Good. We know each other well.
Yeah.
You spoke about the concern about the stage, what happened in your prior. Is that the application that you put forward, is that the same application as far as its layout that you put forward annually?
Yes. But it's not the location of the stage, it's the actual stage itself I've changed. Not the location of the stage, which is what's called for, but the actual stage, I decided to upgrade it a little bit.
And
that's
so
really irrelevant to this, but I guess, but it's just, that's what I decided.
And it's your testimony that the stage was placed how far from the road?
It was placed 10 feet from the road. In other words, according to the documents from some law, there has to be a 2-foot setback. But the 2-foot setback only pertains to a setback rule, which is not any, you know, which is not a strict compliance rule. Everything has to be 2 feet from the sidewalk. Well, so the first question is, was the stage 2 feet from the sidewalk? The answer to that is yes. Then the question becomes, how far from the sidewalk would the stage be without the food vendor, which we've already discussed that. So they put it up at 10 feet. Not that they measured or anything, that's just the way, that's where they put it up. Because that would be the place, all the guide wires and all the hookups, okay, would take to put that stage up.
So your testimony is that the stage was 10 feet from the sidewalk?
Approximately. I mean, I just measured it with my foot. There's other testimony that actual measurements.
Okay, and I'm holding in my hand what I believe was the same thing that was presented as far as your application and your, this would have been your site plan.
Site plan, yes.
And this is a site plan that was prepared for you and or by you and presented to the commission.
Correct.
And this site plan was the one that the commission reviewed and gave approval.
My knowledge.
And this is the site plan that you relied upon and was going to rely upon and should have relied upon for laying out your site for the event.
Yeah, that's where we put everything. In compliance with the application.
Okay. And your site plan does show these beads, right?
Yes.
And what do those beads represent?
Beer tubs.
Those represent beer tubs. But you agree that there weren't beer tubs there in that spot?
No, there were beer tubs there.
Okay. Well, what about that stage? Is that on here, the site plan somewhere?
The stage is on the site plan.
Well, I'm not the stage, I'm sorry. Oh. The mobile bar.
It's over to the right hand corner.
Okay. So the mobile bar that we were shown in the photos.
Is that mobile bar that you have in yellow?
Over here in the corner.
Yeah.
It's not. It was not in the location. It wasn't in the corner, though, was it?
Yes. By your photographs.
Okay.
You took the picture.
Okay, well, we'll bring that forward, okay?
Oh, okay.
And we'll allow the magistrate to decide whether they were there or not. Okay.
Okay.
You agree?
Pictures are worth 1,000 words. I don't have 1,000 words to explain it.
I don't have any other questions.
I have a couple questions. Okay, I'm holding this document. Is that your master plan for this?
Yes, sir.
Event. And of course, this document contains no specifications, no details other than
pictures.
Pictures. Not even pictures.
Well, whatever.
This stage was supposed to be how far from Main Street?
Okay, if I complied with that master plan, it would be 10 feet.
And how do we determine that from looking at this?
Mm-hmm. Well, we can use somewhat of logic.
The I don't food, even see a scale on this document.
Well, I'm going to explain it to you. The food vendor is 10 by 10. So that 1F would be a 10 by 10 thing. So the city has come along and said, well, it must be 10 feet. That's the city. That's not me. To specify that that stage should
so
be...
So the city infers from the fact that this right. food station was going to be 10 by 10.
Yes.
That in conjunction with that 2 feet, was going to be 12 feet from Main Street.
Correct. That's how they came up with the 12 feet.
All right.
But now they wanted me to move
it... The stage was actually 10 feet.
10 or 11 feet.
And you figured that out by pacing it off.
I have a 12-inch foot. Best
you know,
I got.
It's almost humorous that the city and you play with something with such catastrophic consequences and nobody can afford a tape measure.
Yeah, that's right.
We have it, Your Honor.
We can represent evidence for the three people that we have to present.
Yeah.
What we think is
from the stage to the street or from some location that the stage previously occupied?
Where the stage was. They know exactly where it was.
When the stage was. So that's while the stage was still in place?
That is correct. And we can tell the people that were there saw it and the marks on the ground. What we think is
I don't hear about marks on the ground. I want to hear about the stage. Was it measured while the stage was still in place?
No. What we think happened here, because they asked him, he had to move it 13 feet to the south, is that they're confusing the fact is that further down Main Street, the pavers have been placed over there, and they're required to set back from the pavers as opposed to the sidewalk. That is not true when you get past Hollywood Avenue to the west. All these pavers are over land owned by the owner of the property, and therefore that is not a proper setback. That's the only thing we can think must have happened on October 17th to force him to move that whole thing 13 feet, because it would then be 24 feet away from the right-of-way, which makes no sense. We think that's what maybe the inspector did at the time.
Okay, so Mr. Johns, you're telling me your estimate on the basis of you pacing this off was that the stage was approximately 10 feet from Main Street.
Something like that.
And the only specifications we can hearken to try to determine precisely where the stage was to measure the food vendor tent
is a reckoning
and extrapolate.
And I don't know if it's my burden or the city's burden.
You let me worry about the burden. Just answer my question.
I will.
And you're telling me the beer tubs were in fact
there were beer tubs
there.
There. There were beer tubs there. No, there were two beer tubs.
All right, on this master plan, I'm depicting five beer tubs. Were the beer tubs put there or not?
No, just two.
There were two beer tubs. All right, I have a mobile bar on what appears to be the northeast corner of the property. Is that where the mobile bar was located?
Yes.
Was the mobile bar there throughout the course of the bike week event?
Yes, sir.
So if I can understand this, what you're saying is, if I did anything wrong here at all, it's that my stage was 2 feet closer to Main Street than perhaps it should have been, but I measured it off 5 foot, and that's as close as I could get. So it's an estimate that about 10 feet instead of 12 feet. You tell me instead of having five beer tubs out there, you think you had about two beer tubs. And you're telling me the mobile bar was where the mobile bar was supposed to be?
Correct, except that I think it's only a 10-foot requirement, not a 12-foot requirement. I maintain the 2-foot setback only pertains to something that's like an easement or like a setback that it doesn't actually play into the hands of a measurement that is really only 10 feet because the stage is 2 feet setback. So therefore, that requirement has now been met, and it's of no further use. The question is everything 2 foot from the sidewalk? The answer is yes. Next question.
What do you mean the question is everything 2 foot from the sidewalk?
Yeah, everything on Main Street has to have a 2 foot setback.
Okay.
So that's from the sidewalk, has to be set back 2 feet. Well, that stage meets that requirement.
Well, excuse me, but this is your master plan.
Yeah.
And although I don't have any specifications, it clearly illustrates that stage is going to be further back from the street than 2 feet.
And it is.
And you're telling me you think it was up to 10 feet away from the street.
Approximately.
They're telling me it was supposed to be 12 feet away from the street.
Right.
I don't have anything on this plan that says one way or the other. All right, so I just want to summarize with you here. You did away with the food court, so if anything, you eliminated the use that you told them you were planning on using that you didn't use. Is that correct?
No, I did not. I moved that food vendor to another location.
Another location that you already had on your plan that
yes.
had already been approved.
Yes.
So it sounds like you eliminated a food court.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you need to consult with these people?
Huh?
Do you need to consult with these folks?
No.
Okay.
It gets very complicated.
No, it's
on a
not
simple
that
matter.
So in any event, so the stage, it would appear, is 10 feet away from the street instead of the 12 feet that's been suggested it should have been. Is that your position?
Yes.
And instead of putting 5 beer tubs out there, you only put 2, so you reduced your beer tub allotment by 3.
By 3, yes, sir.
And it's your recollection the mobile bar stayed where the mobile bar was supposed to be.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me hear from somebody from the city.
We have to do some testimony.
I think I already heard it, to be honest with you. But if you want to bring them up and do it anyway.
I'd like to call paper leads. And I want to touch on this table here.
Mr. Hemer, can we get you to maybe talk into that microphone?
Sure.
Or?
Sure, try.
Can you turn it on? Is it on?
You got it.
Thank you.
I just put it on.
Now it's on.
Now it's on. Okay, yeah. Please state your full name.
Hi, my name is Phaedra Harper. I'm not quite sure what you want me to say, except for that we did complete the measurements that you see.
When did you complete those measurements, and what do they show?
Yesterday, just upon getting prepared for this meeting with you today, we went to the property to verify that where the stage was where it was. And we brought a tape measure, and we actually measured out from the edge of the sidewalk because we really believed that possibly there was a confusion about who owned the brick pavers. So we actually did put our approved development plan when we constructed the second building. We brought that on here today so that you can see that we do own those brick pavers. Because like Mr. Hemer said, south of or east of us, the brick pavers are owned by the city of Daytona Beach. So we thought maybe this whole thing was just a confusion because we were in compliance with our master plan. In fact, we did not put mobile bars up, that's correct, and we didn't actually put up the second mobile bar. So we felt that we were in compliance, so we thought, well, maybe this was just a confusion, and we went to verify the measurements yesterday.
What do those measurements show?
We measured 12 feet from the edge of the sidewalk up to the edge of the brick pavers, and then we measured another 2 feet onto the black asphalt to where the feet of the stage were.
And how do you know the feet of the stage were there?
You can see evidence of where the stage was located, and also based on the regulations of this roof construction that we've talked about, there's a 45-degree angle where these guidelines have to go a foot into the ground to hold the roof on. So you can see where those holes were placed, and, of course, from there you can measure exactly a 45-degree angle geometrically from the edge of the stage to that point. So,
let's talk about the mobile bar for a moment. You've seen it. They had a lot of pictures here today of that mobile
bar. Well, the mobile bar was constructed in such a fashion that it appeared to be possibly a permanent facility. It was very nicely constructed, but it so happens that they were in 8-foot sections. So once we found out in the notice of hearing on November 19th, we started to make arrangements just to move the supposed bar, even though people were using it just to lean on and stuff. We did locate it to another area.
After the event, was that an active bar on your establishment?
No, it's just that with New Year's Eve coming up, we felt it does cost money to move the bar, so you know, now we have to move it back in 2 weeks.
We have no further questions.
Thank you.
Hang on a second. What was the evidence on the ground that told you where the stage was? It was
The stage is constructed out of metal, and it rained during the event the first day, the 17th. I'm not sure if it rained after that. So, of course, there's huge rust areas where the feet of the stage were located throughout the black asphalt.
Okay. Anything else?
No, thank you.
I'm sorry. Tony, did you want to cross-examine her?
No.
All right.
This is Simon Nula. Please state your full name.
Simon Nula. And I'd just like to make a statement. I've sat in on the planning meetings for Biketoberfest and Bike Week,
They make it very clear that these drawings are not to scale. In fact, there's jokes made about people making hand drawings, and they've never specified that they had to be drawn by an architect to exact scale. So by not being drawn to exact scale, the architectural term of something not to scale is not correct. Don't rely on these measurements 100% as being correct. And also, too, in the master plan, you can eliminate a vendor space if you want. You just can't add one. So we were allowed to eliminate those beer tubs if we chose. We just had to show that we may have one there, so it was approved. If we chose not to have one, that was our decision. And also with the vendor, if we choose not to have a vendor in a certain position, we don't have to have it, even though we do pay the full permitting fees to have that vendor, even though they may not appear at the actual event, which the master plan allows for. And that's all I'd like to say.
And did you participate also in those measurements that we see up on that slide?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay. And did you personally observe the length from the area where the stage was to the sidewalk on Main Street?
Yes, I did.
And what was that distance?
It was 12 feet of brick and then an additional foot and a half, 2 feet to the black area that showed the distinct rush marks where the pads were set from the stage sections.
Thank you. No further questions.
Okay, are there any other witnesses to be brought forward as far as testimony to be presented?
Yes, Your Honor. The city would like to call Colleen Mouse and rebuttal to some of what's been discussed. And Ms. Mouse, you heard the testimony related to the location, both of the stage as well as the mobile bar.
Yes, sir.
And first of all, just tell us how many site inspections have you done over the years as relates to special events, particularly faculty and faculty?
Oh, my goodness. Like individual properties? Hundreds.
Okay. And in doing those, what are you looking for?
The main thing specifically, that pertains to Main Street specifically, is there's a 2-foot setback. That 2-foot setback is measured from a right of way. Doesn't matter what your textured pavement is, whether it be asphalt, concrete, regardless of the fact, the right of way line does not move. So, what they said, in fact, yes, the textured pavement is different to the east as it is to the west. That's not a measurement. The surface is not pertinent.
No. You
can't hear me.
I'm sorry, you're supposed to be here.
No, go ahead.
No,
I'm sorry.
I just had her with the microphone.
Again, I'm just talking about this site plan.
Correct.
That was received from the business, presumably from Mr. Johns, as part of his application.
Correct.
And do we require them to put a legend on the site plan?
We appreciate that. They either put legends or they list in the individual squares what type of vendor it is, whether it be a leather vendor, food vendor, something like that, because there's a different separation for tents from food uses as opposed to other type uses.
Okay, so this one is selected to put a legend on.
Correct.
Okay. And the measurements that are placed on here, those were placed by them, not by anyone in the city.
Correct.
Now, you went out and you made a determination it was a violation along with code enforcement.
Correct.
What all did you see that made you was a violation?
Well, if you look at the pictures Mr. Garcia actually took after we noticed the violation, on the opposite side of those palm trees is actually the right-of-way line. I'm talking to the north now, toward Main Street right-of-way.
Okay, now let me slow you down a second because we're looking at that picture, and as we look at this site plan, what are we talking about on the site plan? You talked about this area where we were
talking about before. The fat black line is
the right-of-way Main Street. That's not the asphalt driving. That's where the public right-of-way begins, which includes the sidewalk.
So what you're showing there is the section at the end of where it says stage and at the end where it says 1F. That's what's in that photo? That's my question.
Correct, except for that the 1F isn't there.
Okay.
The stages.
All right. I'm not going to tell us about that.
Okay, so upon inspection, you've got your 2-foot setback on Main Street, which is going to be about where the if you don't mind going back to the
Thank
we're
you.
About where the tree is. See the tree grate, the interior side of the tree grate. Okay, then you come in, what appears to be, and we'll ballpark it again, how about 2 feet? And I've got a stage starting without the ability to have the 10-foot supposed-ish food vendor. So the stage has been moved out of compliance with the approved site plan submitted, regardless of the dimension. It's not where it said it was supposed to be.
Stop right there for a second. Okay, what am I not seeing to the right of the palm tree that the policeman is standing in the way of?
Well, it's not even that. You're going to have a little another band of bricks and then the sidewalk, which is the right-of-way line.
And, all right, so to the right of the palm tree, I have how much more brick before I hit the right-of-way?
I'd say, okay, let's say 8 inches.
Okay,
maybe 10 inches.
How much right-of-way before I get to the street?
No, that, well, no, no. Right-of-way is right-of-way. Right-of-way is property line. So anything that isn't private property is right-of-way. That's our property, what we're measuring from, not the street. So the fat black line is sidewalk, not asphalt.
All right, so they're supposed to be 12 feet from what you would determine to be the sidewalk.
Or the right-of-way line, correct, correct. You're correct.
Where is the sidewalk in that photo?
On the other side of the tree grate.
So you're telling me there's 2 feet of sidewalk on the other side of that tree grate?
No, I'm saying there's probably 2 feet of property line on the other side of that tree grate. Approximately.
Okay, and then how much further before I get to sidewalk?
No, it's not 2 feet. I'm sorry. Danny, do you have a picture showing where the sidewalk is? That top one would have been it, probably, I think. To the top upper corner, maybe? Can you see the distance, sir? It's about that much. And it narrows the further you get west. And that's a really good picture for the mobile bar question that's coming up next, by the way. So that 2 foot, in line with that, should have been a food vendor. Go straight to the west, and that should have been a food vendor. However, it's not a food vendor. It's a stage.
So the 2 feet I'm looking at roughly, it what, comes from the inside of those palm trees?
Correct.
Can we go back to that photograph?
Because you can't be in the palm trees.
All right. Okay, so my line of demarcation as far as my 12, where my 12 feet ends.
Is, see that
to
white?
The north, to, hang on a second. To the north is the inside of those palm trees. That's what you're telling me.
No. It's that white line. You can see it really good from this picture. See that white line that's at the
right,
sidewalk mark?
I see the
mark?
White line. What's to the right of the white line? Is that street?
To the right is right-of-way.
Don't
correct.
Say right-of-way again. Is that street on the other side of the right line?
It's sidewalk.
It's sidewalk. Okay, but in any event, you're telling me the
12 feet in from that line.
The northern part of the 12 feet that was supposed to exist between the stage and whatever to the north that was the border on, the north border is that white line?
Yes.
And
yes.
You're also telling me that the stage was pretty much in the same location to the west as that mobile bar is that we're looking at right there.
Correct.
So then you're telling me the stage, just eyeballing it from here, was maybe 2 or 3 feet away from the northern boundary as opposed to 12 feet.
I'm saying it was less than 12 feet. I can't give you an exact dimension. How about if I say 8? Does that work? No, it's not 2 or 3 feet. It was not in compliance with the master plan.
Well, that's for me to determine.
I'm sorry.
Right now, nobody's giving me a whole lot of detail.
I'm sorry.
Other than a lot of vague photographs and even more ambiguous terms.
Okay.
So, where does the calculation of the 12 feet start from on the basis of what I'm seeing right there? So, from your line to the south, where does that line start?
That white line, if you carry it westward.
That white line, if I continue it westward.
Correct.
All right.
Which is
and
a
you're telling
line.
Me the stage would have been in about the same location heading to the west as that mobile bar was.
Actually, it was a little bit further north than the mobile bar.
A little further north.
Correct.
And you're sitting here testifying as an eyewitness.
Correct.
And you're telling me you're estimating the northernmost part of that stage was how far from the northern boundary?
Click back on that other one, Denzel, please.
You're going to be able to see it yourself.
That's it.
See where she's standing? Unfortunately, she was going to be here today to testify as well. That's how close it was.
Okay, I don't think we have a one.
She's blocking out my view of the white line.
You want the compliance picture?
Please.
See where the pavers are and see where the
Ms.
skate was.
You are out there. How far do you say it was?
From that white line?
Yes.
8 feet. See where the stage was, sir? They're saying it was on that line. It was not on that line. It was over on the pavers. I wish it would have been a little further out.
Well, that other photograph showed me the stage on the pavers.
Correct. Yeah. And they're saying the stage was there. But we're saying the stage should have even been further inward, southward. Okay. So I'm just saying, instead of a specific dimension, it's not where it was supposed to be from our inspection.
All right. Beer tubs. They knocked them down from 5 to 2. What's the problem with that?
No worries.
So what is the problem with them? Was there a violation related to beer tubs or mobile bars?
Mobile bar.
Okay.
Beer tubs. The lessening of the number is not an impact. However, what was shown as, please excuse me, the mobile bar on the east side of the property, Mr. Johns just testified, I believe, although I'm not quite sure, that he took the food vendor that was on the north side and moved it over to the east side of the property. And then the mobile bar was in front of that, which is an addition of a food vendor, a moving of a food vendor, and the mobile bar as depicted on there, although not dimensioned, is much smaller in size than the actual mobile bar, which we have pictures of.
So from a proportion of a property, it's a substantial proportion, far more than its corners.
Correct, but it was in compliance with the 2-foot setback. True.
Did they move the bar or not?
It got way bigger, and they added a food vendor from the north side to the east side. I mean, from the west side to the east side.
Okay, I don't see anything in this notice of violation about moving the food vendor.
We didn't count that. We didn't even notice that.
I don't want to hear about that again.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so they moved the mobile bar. What's the violation there?
It's bigger.
It's bigger?
Bigger.
So if it's bigger, I take it you're telling me it encroached in areas it wouldn't otherwise encroach upon?
Correct.
Based on the master plan that was submitted?
Correct.
Would it be fair to say that?
We don't even receive notice of that violation. I don't believe
that. I don't know that notice. I'm just about... Isn't the notice on the notice sheet?
The notice says violation of master plan outside activity. Compliance with the plan itself. That would be a violation of the compliance. I don't know what the dialogue is, if that's what they're speaking to, the subsequent dialogue. Would it be fair to say that this was not a fair representation of what was placed there?
Correct.
And substantial.
Can we have pictures?
I just want to talk to
you. Okay. Yes, substantially larger.
Okay. And that's
okay. All right.
You can always be bigger and go smaller.
Hang on 1 second.
Can I ask a question too?
Yeah, I'll let you. Just hang on a second. Failure to comply with submitted site plan by moving the stage. Okay. I'm honing in on that one. And erecting a bar. I have a mobile bar depicted on the site plan. You're telling me that's the mobile bar that they erected improperly?
Correct.
And how did they erect it improperly?
They erected it bigger. It's bigger.
How much
substantial,
bigger?
Substantially. I don't have an accurate dimension.
Adjectives don't play out real well.
Okay, if we're looking at the way that it was submitted and we're basing everything on that sort of ballpark-ish, that appears to be a 10 by 10-ish bar or
okay.
so. That's a big old bar.
All right.
I don't have a dimensional requirement, but if you look at a picture running down Main or from Main Street that Danny has taken, that bar protrudes much further to the north than proposed on that site plan.
Well, that's the part that I'm interested
that
in,
me
because
too.
That at least I have something depicted on this plan that I can relate to. So, in your opinion, it wasn't
okay.
supposed to be any more than 2 feet, I guess, 2 feet to the right-of-way?
Correct, which it was in compliance with. However, look at the dimension of the length of the bar, and then we'll start going through all the pictures, please.
So you're telling me lengthways it intrudes too far to the west?
To the north. It's way fatter, not longer. It may be longer, too. I'm more concerned about the protrusion to the north. It's not compliant with what was on the plan.
Do you mean you're...
No, that's not a good one. Keep going.
Are you trying to say the extension of the bar to the west and the south?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm usually good at that. Keep going.
All right, and you're telling me that the plan, as depicted, would have estimated this would have been about a 10 by 10 structure, and you're telling me that the mobile bar that we're looking at is significantly larger than that.
Yes. You probably want to go back. I don't know. You might be going the right way. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me talk to Mr. Heaton for a while here. I'm sorry. Did you want to ask her a question?
When was the picture of the stage that you showed to a police officer that was blocking the right?
10/17.
And was the stage permanently erected by then?
No, the roof was still underneath the big metal things.
Absolutely. Okay. And so, as I understand it, you, the city, did not take any measurements to determine the distance from the stage to the sidewalk. Is that correct?
You are correct.
And in addition, you did not take any measurements of the recently offending bar and the dimensions of that as opposed to what you call the site plan. You're just eyeballing it?
Oh, correct.
These are all eyeballs, right?
Correct.
Thank you.
What's your certainty of the landmarks, the trees, the measurements of those based on which your experience over the years? You're certain?
I am very certain.
Of that distance that you represented to the...
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Hang on a second. You just said the roof had not been, lifted?
Right.
When the photograph was taken? So, I mean, it looks like the stage is in place. What you're trying
that's
to say
not
is the roof...
That's not the same roof. Go back two pictures. There's a roof. The 45-degree angle roof thing is sitting on top of the stage. You'll see.
Okay. My only point is did the stage, as you see in that photograph, ever move?
Did it move locations? No, sir. It stayed in place until after the event.
So you're telling me when you saw it, the roof was in various stages. The roof was being in the process of being erected still.
And so were the panels that are the ground part.
But the stage was in place.
Not all of the stage. The stanchions that are the light stanchions go in first. See those light things? The big old silver things are light and speaker stands.
Okay, one of the few demarcations I've come away with from this conversation we've had, as sloppy as it's been, is I at least saw a stage that appeared to be on brick pavers that appeared to be too far north.
Correct.
Than this plan indicated.
You're
is that
exactly
correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank
yes.
you. That's all the questions I have. Mr. Heaton, you want to speak to that point?
Yes, we'd like to move, and also move the PowerPoint into evidence for the that includes all the studies and documents we've talked about today. First of all, the testimony has been by the applicant that they did not move it. That's in the place where exactly where it was supposed to be, and now we have the measurements that were provided to you. That's the only measurement that's been done by anybody. So as a practical matter, the only evidence the magistrate has before it is this testimony here and the testimony of the applicant that they did not move it, nor intended to move it, and knew what they were supposed to be doing at the time. At the same time, that in order to say you must move something in 12 hours, there's got to be some nexus to the public health, safety, and welfare. That's the 162.21, this legislation which creates the code enforcement. But there's no nexus between the public health, safety, and welfare where this particular stage was and where it was and where it's been in the past. Therefore, to put an onus to they move it at that point in time
is simply illegal. They don't have a legal right to do that, absent the finding of a nexus to the public health, safety, and welfare. We do not believe that even the notice complies necessarily. This thing about the bar was just made known to us in the notice that came in, and now these photographs showing that bar being there as being illegal is the first time we've ever seen that. So therefore, I think that issue has never been properly noticed and should not be before the magistrate at all. We believe the city is going to take a step as vigorous as this with a tremendous property rights issue that result from it, had the obligation to properly go out and measure, create a record, create evidence that the magistrate can rely on, and come up with a decision that's based on admissible evidence and testimony. There has been none provided other than just, I eyeballed it. I don't believe that property rights can be impacted with somebody who just eyeballed it. We believe that the testimony you have is as that there was no noncompliance. As we're testified to, the fact they can move a food vendor around as long as they don't add one. They can relieve one.
I'm sorry, I didn't know if you were intended this to be a final argument. I did have one more rebuttal with this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's a late witness that I want to bring forward, that being Mr. Webster.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was invited.
Were you done?
Well, I'm not sure.
All right. Go ahead and let's hear from our next witness.
City will call Mr. Danny Webster.
Morning. Can you please state your name, please?
Daniel Webster.
You solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Webster, you state your name. Do you have some relationship to that location?
Yes. My name is Daniel Webster. I live at 21 North Halifax Avenue, Daytona Beach, Florida, which is less than half a block to the north.
Okay. We've had numerous discussions. You've been here in the audience as an interested neighbor. We've had numerous discussions about locations of things on that site.
May I see, please, the photo showing, I believe it was the respondent's photograph, showing the whole or totality of where the stage was to be located on the property? There was a photo a few minutes ago that was shown with the backdrop up against the Boot Hill Saloon. There was one close to that one that one would work if necessary.
I'm going to hand you the same set of photos. If you can identify, maybe you'll be able to find it a little better.
This photo would be good enough. No, this is more what I'm looking for. I want to see the wall along the Boot Hill between the Main Street station and the Boot Hill.
Yeah, I'm going to object. I don't know what, other than a property owner, what evidence can he present to the manager about the issues of those violations.
I guess he's a potential witness.
We'd also object. Those photographs were taken in 2011. Not
here. Well, if we can't find it, I can explain the situation. With respect to this condition, I actually personally observed what was going on at the premises on the first day of Biketoberfest. As chairman of the Main Street board, I was going down the entire Main Street and actually photographing what was occurring with respect to a number of the facilities, including this one. And so I was personally there at the time. And I've also watched the testimony thus far. And what you have is, if may I see, with respect to the approved plan for this project as part of the, you will note that the stage was to be in approximately one-third of the distance from the building all the way to the street and was to occupy the middle third of that area. All right, and if you had looked at the photographs earlier with respect to where the Boot Hill is, that's important because that means the stage would directly back up towards the Boot Hill and its fence, the building itself and the fence. What happened is this has now been moved, instead of in the middle third of that open area, to the front third of that area, closer to the street. And that's an open area between Boot Hill and the Main Street station. What happens, and a problem we're having with respect to Main Street, is we have bands that are competing against each other. Because you have a band right on the Boot Hill property facing towards the Main Street station. Now you have a band on Main Street station, not back blocked by the building, but out further forward, now with nothing blocking it towards the Boot Hill band. And behind a band, you get almost as much volume as you do forward from the speakers. So we now have those bands being louder against each other. And you also have in this situation on Main Street station that a second, even larger stage to the rear. So within this a few hundred feet of each other, we have three bands playing at the same time. And what that happens with respect to the neighborhood, that impacts the neighborhood. Because now each band wants to be heard, and they play louder and louder and louder, and it continually gets louder. And so we have a situation here where their drawing showed no more than one-third in the middle third of that area, which would substantially blocked the blowback from their band towards Boot Hill. Now being moved forward, you can see the fence there and the building for the Boot Hill. Now it's been moved forward to where that metal railing is near the palm tree on the right corner there. Nothing blocking it. That makes it worse in the neighborhood. This is some of the things that we're looking at with respect to the Main Street Board and as a resident as to what's going on and what's wrong with what happens during special events. And this is a prime example of where something's been changed after the plan's approved that has a serious detrimental effect with respect to the neighborhood. That's my testimony.
Do you want a question?
Mr. Webster, on what technical knowledge do you have that noise is greater from the back of a band than the front of a band?
Well, for the past 15 years, I've lived on Main Street and experienced it and been out there monitoring the bands from time to time as to when it's loud and when it's not and how we deal with the bands and what stops the blowback. And if you've ever been in front of a speaker or gotten behind a speaker, there's an awful lot of volume coming back from behind a speaker also. And I've experienced it personally.
And if the testimony is that the master plan submitted by the applicant was accepted by the city, and they placed it there, albeit maybe out further than you would like, how is that illegal on behalf of the applicant?
Well, I believe it's illegal because it was supposed to be in the middle third, not the front third. When you look at what their testimony was, they said it was back 2 feet beyond the asphalt. When we see the actual picture of it in location, it was directly, it was forward onto the paver. So first off, where they've testified it was not where their own photograph or where the city's photograph shows stage was actually placed. And what that does is that's affecting where the blowback occurs with respect to the building and the fence.
I don't believe that's the testimony. As I understand it, that photograph was taken before the stage was actually set. Where they show it to be like it is fully in compliance with their plan.
No, what I saw was a photograph of the stage set with a tarp over it, the pylons in place with the roof ready to raise up.
That was the date in violation. I took both photos.
And those are the speakers. Those are the speakers.
No, I'm talking about the stage itself and the pylons with the roof on it.
No further questions.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing further, Your
Honor. You better canvass your audience. You might have witnesses out there. If they came here to be heard, then I'm going to let them be heard.
You may be excused. Thank you.
Yes.
Do you want to be heard on this matter, sir?
Yes.
Come on forward.
Good morning.
Could
you say your name, please?
John Nicholson.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
My name is John Nicholson. I've lived in the area for almost 30 years. We've had a problem for 30 years with Bike Week.
It's an ongoing thing, not just with this property, but with others. We as residents have gone to the city, have asked for certain variances, certain accommodations, the turning of the speakers, where things are located, to make sure that the residents are not impacted as much as possible by this. The city has guaranteed us or told us that these things will be done. These are the regulations. They will be followed. Now what we're hearing is, well, it doesn't matter what the city wants. I'm supposed to be back here. I'm only moving it ahead another 10 or 20 feet. It doesn't matter that it's over here and it's a 10 by 10. I made it I think it's 25 by 15. New stage is permanent. It sat there. They took it down last night. I walk that street every morning between 4 and 6. It sat there. They say they don't use it. Turkey Ride Run, there was a guy behind the bar handing out beer. There were people sitting around the bar. I consider that being used. I saw 9 violations or 9 differences between what the diagram showed and what actually happened. If you look at it, and they're not supposed to vary from this diagram, I understand if it's a foot or so or whatever, but when you talk about a 10 by 10 over in that corner and you move it over here and it's now a 15 by 25, that to me is a large. They don't have to measure. They just see it. When you have a stage that's supposed to be back 25 feet from the road, you walk up and there's no food vendor that's supposed to be there and the stage is now there, you shouldn't have to measure. There's no question it is larger and it's in the wrong location. So I'm asking you to follow the guidelines, not just because of this individual discrepancy. It affects what's going to happen in the past. I like Bike Week. I don't want it to change. If these things start being varied and played with, the neighbors will get on it and Bike Week may go away. Thank you very much.
Okay, Officer Garcia, I have a question or two for you. I have a copy of a notice of violation dated October 17, 2012. Is that the notice of violation that you gave the property owner?
That's correct. I handed it to Mr. Johns.
The description of the violation says outside activity violation of master plan. Did you specifically tell Mr. Johns what the nature of the violation was?
I basically started to, and I had been interrupted by Ms. Harper, who kept stating, don't sign it, Dad, don't sign it, don't sign it, don't sign it.
Okay, did you tell Mr. Johns that your concern was that the stage was at a location other than that depicted on the master plan?
No, not at that point. I told them earlier when I came with one of the stage, the guys that set up the stage, I told them that was needed to be moved.
Okay, so it's your testimony. You specifically recall having told Mr. Johns at some point in time prior to the issuance of this notice of violation, the stage was in the wrong location.
That's correct.
All right, did you have any discussion with regard to the mobile bar?
No, not at that time.
Okay. All right, anyone else?
Yes. Do you have the knowledge of anyone else advising Mr. Johns as well about the stage?
My supervisor and
the nature of this, Your Honor, is just
I've already heard what I need to hear from Mr. Garcia. Counsel's objection. I don't know that this is a court of law, but it is well taken.
No
if
problem.
You want to call somebody else to testify, call somebody else to testify.
I just was for economy of time.
I want everyone to make sure they leave here having said whatever they came to say.
It's fine, Your Honor. I'll go ahead and call Mr. Garcia, Hector Garcia.
All right, hang on a sec. Mr. Hebert, do you have any questions you wanted to ask me?
Did you conduct any measurements to determine the exact distance of the stage as installed from the sidewalk on Main Street?
No, I did not take any measurements.
Thank you.
Can I make one statement on a compliance photo and the violation day photo? The one with the Sherry Siracusa, the police officer there?
Familiar with the photograph, the one of her back.
Okay. That was, if you look at the stage was on the pavement.
Mm-hmm.
And then the compliance photo where they've made measurements and put the line where they say their stage was ending. That's where the asphalt is, so it clearly shows.
Okay, thank you. All right, were you going to call anyone else?
Well,
okay, hang on one second. Were you calling anyone else?
No, you're not.
All right, did you want to call anyone else?
I'd like to recall, Baker, for a minute, to talk about that photograph that we just talked about.
Sure, it is.
We put the photograph up again, once again, with the police officer back.
This picture seems to be coming up repeatedly, so I'm Phaedra Harper. I just want to review this photo. That particular day it was raining, so we had to take, there's like storage and speakers underneath where, because you can't see the feet of the stage, of course, as you can tell. And this is all a kind of a it's like a plastic tarp, is that what it is? It's a tarp, and underneath all that is all the equipment to try to keep it from getting wet. So
is that
everybody,
not the stage that I'm looking at?
You can't tell that there's pictures can be deceiving due to the fact that the angle of the shot, there's things underneath there that are covered by the tarp, so you can't actually see where the edge of the stage is from this picture.
Is that the stage that people performed on?
Right.
And when they performed on it, is that where it was located?
Well, it's hard for me to tell where the feet are, and you can see the trusses are still on wheels. So
why am I not just looking at the top of that surface and concluding that's the top of the stage?
Yeah.
Is that the top of the stage?
Yeah. But you can't see where the feet are.
Okay. All right. We done?
One more
witness, then we're done.
Actually, looking at the picture, the officer's blocking. If you saw the right-of-way to where her back is, it is 12 feet of pavers. I've measured them. As you can see, the tarp is actually overlapping about a foot and a half in like a kind of like a mountain-type system coming down this way because the speakers are pushing the actual tarp out that are being stored under it. If that tarp wasn't there, you would see that that stage is clearly on the black macadam, and there's clearly 12 feet of space from the edge of the right-of-way or sidewalk to the edge of the pavers, showing that we are in full compliance according to the master plan. That photo does not give a detailed look at what's missing. We're missing about a foot and a half because of the tarp bulging out at the bottom. The top is correct, and you can see the top's actually set back further this way than the bottom is. So we're losing about a foot and a half of actual space off the right-of-way. And that's where I took the measurements from. That's why it shows that it's on the black. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
We have a further testimony.
Okay.
If you need argument, I'd be happy to give something on.
Go ahead. Give your closing argument. You've got 2 minutes. And you'll have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, Mr. Kelly, what this is about is all about this site plan. It's a site plan that was part of the application. It was presented by the applicant. It had information that anyone doing the site plan, this plan as part of the application, could rely upon. It should rely upon. And that information showed approximate dimensions, but it showed specific representations of what those measurements should be in its legend. And in that legend, it showed distances, even though those distances weren't spelled out on the the drawings in place themselves. And as we even talked of the mobile bar, when you look at the mobile bar in relationship to the other items identified as F that were represented as being 10 by 10, then it becomes something that would be at or about a representation of approximately that size and shape. And so something substantially different was ultimately placed there and remained there up until yesterday. But more specifically, you've asked the questions about the stage, the impact, and you've heard testimony on each of those issues. From code enforcement officers, zoning officers who have been in the field making these types of determinations for many years. And even though they weren't standing with tape, the difference, even from the lay neighborhood individuals, the difference was so substantial that it was something that one viewing can recognize and make that determination. I remind you, Mr. Bukowski, that the when the testimony of Ms. Miles as well as Mr. Garcia, Hector Garcia, was that when they went and they saw that the stage was in the wrong place, that they told them it had to be moved, and they were told that it couldn't be moved. However,
We're being told now that, as we heard from Ms. Hopper, that while it was raining then, it may have been moved, I'm not sure it was moved, and that they took measurements at the feet while it was clear to see on the stage what the stage, where it was, and what the stage was. We also have been asked to take a look and rely upon the guidelines for your determination. This isn't the venue where you're relying upon the guidelines for your determination. We are at this point, we're making determinations of a code violation, and that code violation is governed by Chapter 162. Your determinations and determinations as pursuant to Chapter 162, as they always have been, on whether or not there was a violation of the code, and as a result of that violation, if I'm making that determination, then what we do next to bring it into compliance or make a determination that now it is in compliance.
Okay, what is your recollection as to the city's testimony regarding the distance of the stage from Main Street? And let me draw your attention to the fact that this is the baseline that I'm dealing with, okay? As simple as it is, this is the baseline that I'm dealing with from which both sides are trying to provide me detailed specifications without the benefit of photographs or measurements at the time to show where any of these things actually were. So, I have a master plan that says Main Street right there. Main Street. I can understand that. That's a street. It doesn't say right away. It doesn't say brick pavers. It says Main Street. And this plan shows that stage supposedly being 12 feet from Main Street. And I only know it's 12 feet because everyone's in agreement that 1F would have been 10 by 10. There's no dispute here that 1F would have been 10 by 10. Because I don't even get the 10 feet. I just get 1F. So between adding 1F and the 2 feet, I've got a master plan that tells me that stage is going to be 12 feet from Main Street. Have you heard any testimony to the effect that that stage was 12 feet from Main Street?
From Main Street, no. I've heard testimony that it was less than 12 feet from the right-of-way line.
Okay, and where did that start?
Now, what recognizing this, Mr. McKelcher, that, and this was testimony, that this was a plan that was submitted for the commission to review as part of an application and for staff review. And it's a plan that's an application or an application process that's been a process that the applicant has participated in over and over again for a number of years. The understanding and recognition of, in the same way that this understanding of certain certain things in a general way, in the same way, just because this black band says Main Street doesn't separate it from recognizing that the measurement is done from the right-of-way line. The people who had to view and rely upon this application, which is the commission, were viewing with that knowledge that the right-of-way line is the determinant point. And even if there was any confusion or any question, the inspectors went out and advised the applicant that indeed there was a problem with its location. And I know the testimony of one of the applicants is that, at this stage we couldn't move it, but then there were testimony of the others that, other testimonies from Ms. Hap Harper and as well as Sai, that at that early stage, as they pointed out with the rain and so forth, that they weren't sure if it was in the same location because implying the possibility of moving the stage. So the point of this, or the process of this violation, or the point of our concern, the city, is that we had a master plan. Our commission reviewed that master plan, reviewed that site plan, relied upon that site plan, and that site plan, based upon the process that we utilized, inspectors went out, viewed, saw, recognized that it was placed incorrectly, and when it was asked to change, changes weren't done. And ultimately, as it related to the mobile bar, they weren't done up and until this very last day before we came.
You're telling me the testimony is that it was understood by all the parties that what I see depicted as Main Street Daytona Beach is actually Main Street and the right of way.
I'm saying that there's no, it's reasonable to.
And the right of way extended from the street to that white line that was being discussed that we heard testimony to?
That would have been the ending point and measuring.
So the 12 feet should have gone from that white line to the stage, correct?
That's the testimony.
There should have been 12 feet in there. And the testimony of Ms. Miles was that the pavers only extended about 8 feet, as I recall her testimony, from the white line. And so if the stage was still shown on the pavers, it was well within the 12 feet. Is that your recollection of the testimony?
I don't quite have that recollection. I know she started to say something about the pavers and then said that she would not need to address the pavers because they won't.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Right. All right. Now let's talk about this mobile bar. Again, assuming that these squares equal 10 by 10, what's your recollection of the testimony that I've heard regarding how big that bar actually was, other than the photographic evidence, which I saw, and I can make my own determinations or my own estimates, but do you recall any testimony specifics regarding the dimensions of that mobile bar?
Nothing except that it was substantially larger than what was being depicted or represented. Based on the proportions of the property.
Okay, good. Do you have anything else to add?
Nothing else.
All right. Mr. Huebner, your turn.
The applicant had absolutely nothing to gain by placing that stage within the footprint that it showed.
There's testimony that the applicant may have had the benefit of competing with another band nearby. And so consequently,
I don't see how that can even be taken into consideration.
I'm not a bar owner on Main Street. I don't compete in that venue, so I don't know the ins and outs and how you get one up on your neighbor. But I've at least heard testimony, and I've heard evidence that would indicate that the stage was relocated to something other than what was depicted on this plan.
Well, you've got again an eyeball testimony of several people, but the people that were there and actually measured the site, which is the only hard evidence you have, that it was 12 feet.
Which people were there that actually measured the site?
These two folks right here.
You're talking about the measurements that were done after the fact?
Yes.
The stage was broken down and removed?
Correct.
I'm sorry, the measurements that were done yesterday?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, that's the only hard testimony you've had as to where that stage was in relationship to the sidewalk, which is basically the right-of-way. And therefore,
I've got a photograph that would indicate that the stage was on the pavers. I've got testimony from a witness from the city that says the distance from the right-of-way to the pavers wouldn't have been any more than 8 feet to begin with. So if it's on or about the pavers,
and
that's 12 feet.
And the testimony you have from the other side says they were on the macadam, they were on the asphalt, because what you were looking at was the spread out of the tarp over on the pavers, and the pavers are say 12 feet.
I was able to see the tarp.
And exactly. And so,
they
measured directly where it's from. Now, it seems to us that if the city is going to take the position.
Folks, the conversation on this topic is over. I don't want to hear anything from the audience. I don't want anybody waving. I don't want anybody gesturing. I want to listen to this gentleman, and I want to hear what he has to say.
As you may recall, I think there was a giant bit of confusion out of the box on this deal because, as I said, the setbacks down the street are all from the pavers themselves because they're owned by the city. As you recall the testimony that they came initially and said, we need you to move this stage 13 feet to the south. Now, the only way that could be is that they're assuming that they owned up to the pavers, and therefore you had to move it, and he couldn't physically even do that. That's part of the confusion here, I think, based on everything that I've seen, and that if you see the actual measurements of where it was clearly 12 feet or pretty darn close anyway. And once again, you'd have to say, what is the nexus to the public health, safety, and welfare here over that sort of thing when you see the impact that it's going to have on property rights? If they have
the impact on property rights is undetermined at this point because your client has remedies available to him, even if there is a determination of noncompliance. And that'll be the time in which we'll argue about the significance of the deviation. Right now, we're here to talk about the deviations. Talk to me about the bar. Are we in agreement that the bar, as depicted on this plan, would appear to have been a structure that was supposed to be in the neighborhood of 10 by 10?
It appears to be that way, too.
Does that bar that I saw in the photographs not appear to be substantially larger than that?
It appears, but I do not know. Nobody's measured it, so nobody knows. And it seems that
you eyeballed it. What's your best estimate?
Well, I don't think my estimate's very important in this. My estimate is what evidence has the city presented to this honorable magistrate exactly what those dimensions are. We can all sit here and eyeball it, angles, whatever you want to do, but who's actually measured and said that is not in compliance?
Well,
and that's their obligation.
I've got a photograph that's been presented to me from which I can presumably use my own common sense and at least make the call as to whether or not I think it's a 10 by 10 structure. And I'll be honest with you, it looks larger than 10 by 10.
I agree with that. But, I mean, I don't think that the evidence has been presented to you, the preponderance of the evidence is presented to you in an admissible fashion upon which you can make that determination. And what is the impact anyway on the public health, safety, and welfare? The fact they didn't take it down to now doesn't make any difference.
I have to presuppose it's something that the city commission and all these people that put all this effort into this master plan have taken into consideration. So I'm going to presume that they put these rules and regulations in there because deviation from those rules and regulations do have impacts. So I'm going to presume that there is an impact. I'm also going to, and I'm also familiar with the fact that your client has remedies. Inevitably, coming back to the special magistrate in the event he's denied future use, to appeal to me to say the gravity of the gravity of the violation doesn't warrant a 3-year ban or whatever it may be.
Bike week is approximately 3 months away.
Okay.
Plans have to be submitted now for temporary facilities on every place in Main Street for that facility. They've got to be presented months in advance so they can be reviewed. They have to hire bands. You have to engage bands. You have to hire people. You have to get ready. Right now, if you find they're in non-compliance, they're not going to be able to file anything, and therefore they've lost bike week.
Evidence. And I can't go nullifying a whole body of rules and regulations.
Well, I think you've got to find by the preponderance. You've got to find by the preponderance of the evidence, though, that in fact that thing was within 12 feet or more. I mean, and there has been no evidence presented to you of that fact, other than I eyeballed it. I thought maybe, and therefore I don't think this honorable magistrate can make a decision on a noncompliance of this consequence without substantial competent evidence in this record. Thank you.
I think we have substantial competent evidence to indicate that the stage deviated from the master plan and the mobile bar deviated from the master plan. We both have sworn testimony as well as photographic evidence. That having been said, I find the respondent to have been in noncompliance. What's the next issue? How much time to come into compliance?
Your
Honor, with the testimony being that the respondent is now in compliance, the position of the city is that we will request a road fine. And the primary reason we're requesting a road fine is that the nature of the violation is a violation that's transient. Well, let me say this way. The violation is such that it's transient in nature. When it happens, the only useful mechanism for enforcing such a violation is to have a recognition that there's an authority or power that can create some type of remedy to deter that the conduct. In our situation, just as he said, if indeed they could not move it or represent that they couldn't move it, then, or even if they can move it, if they're not to move it, then there's no useful risk of harm to any violator if all they can do is say, all right, fine, penalize us monetarily, we would much rather take our chances and go for it. And besides that, unless you give us a lot of time, you won't be able to get a penalty on us anyway. So in this situation, a will fine is essential, because what a will fine does is it creates, which is already ultimately created in statute, but however, we know the practice of the magistrate as well as the practice of the city of the board that a declaration of will fine is what typically is relied upon to be able to utilize the authority in Chapter 162 for recognizing a repeat violation and restricting or restraining someone from proceeding from violating again in a relatively short time period.
So if I understand what you're saying, is the exigent nature of the violation being something that comes and goes before the respondent can be called to task before this panel, is a fact or circumstance that should be taken into consideration in the imposition of a will fine.
That's correct.
It's not on the basis of the respondent's repeated violations in the past. It's what you're telling me is the nature of the beast in this micro world we call Bike Week.
That's correct, John.
And you have already heard testimony from this respondent to the effect that he couldn't take it down within 12 hours if he had tried, because he had a specific type of stage erected and the people that he needed to take it down weren't available.
And what I would say to that is that that's a consideration that should be made prior to putting it up, ensuring that it's being placed exactly as depicted in the plan.
So theoretically, because he went to the time, effort, and expense of getting something sturdier and safer that he couldn't break down in a moment's notice, he should be penalized.
No, he should be placed in a situation that in the future that he make the assurances necessary so that it's not placed in the wrong, so that there are no alterations, because the impact is still an impact that's suffered by others, by the neighborhood, by residents, by the competing businesses, and the necessity for compliance is a necessity that's essential in these types of situations because of the nature, as you said, the nature of the beast.
Okay, Mr. Heidman, do you want to be heard on the matter of the will fine?
Well, the fine is
somewhat irrelevant. The penalty they now face is irreparable. There has not yet been a determination of whether this stage was a foot or an inch or 2 feet from where it should have been. So I don't know how they could not take it down in a reasonable period of time. It simply was not possible, and therefore it was removed four or five days later, as I recall, after the 17th. So that's been in compliance and that's gone. To say that they should be fined to penalize them because they did something they contest they didn't have, did not do at all, and we still don't believe there's any testimony to it, seems to be very inappropriate. As to the bar creates no injury to the health, safety, and welfare. It was set back inside by the gas station, and it was not a continuing issue. It was not a continuing violation, and therefore, Bike Week was over. The Biketoberfest was over, so they're not being in compliance. They can't be because Bike Week is gone. They can put it in place they want to after Bike Week, after Biketoberfest. So therefore, how can they be fined for putting a bar wherever they want to put it? They can. It's not like a leaking roof or something that's going to fall down or a decayed building. It's just a bar they moved back inside there to use whenever they wanted to. Biketoberfest was over. Thank you.
We'll put out the application requirement is 3 days to break. I'm sorry, 5 days to break down everything at the conclusion of Bike Week, and that's across the board for all applicants involved in the master plan.
All right. Well, taking into consideration the rapidity with which violations such as this can occur and then be eliminated, and further, given the fact that the will fine is a predicate to actually imposing a fine in a scenario in which the respondent, more often than not, has ample time to come into compliance before he's brought before the special magistrate, then, quite frankly, I believe it's the exigencies of the circumstances that warrant the will fine. So, therefore, I'm going to grant the will fine, and that for any future violation that occurs, the respondent will be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $5,000 per occurrence. Is there anything else?
No, sir.
Pardon?
No, sir.
Okay. All right, folks. Good luck to you. All right. I believe we have case number 11.
Yes.
Tara Green III, LLC.
It's a non-compliance next cutoff.
Based on our inspector's report, I find the respondent to be in non-compliance. In order for the respondent to come into compliance by January 2, 2013, will be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. Case number 12, New Life Bible Church, TRC.
It's also non-compliance next cutoff.
Based on our inspector's report, I find the respondent to be in noncompliance and order the respondent to commit compliance by January 2, 2013, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. I believe that concludes.
Yes, sir.
Case 13 is in compliance. Case 14 we did. Case 15 we did. Case 16 is in compliance. Is there any miscellaneous business to be brought before the special magistrate?
Have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.